How's it going? And welcome to episode 33 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On the Wire Pod. Of course, if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. And I am once again joined by the 2020 TGFBI champion, Kevin Hastings, who of course can and should be followed on the Twitter himself at HastingKevin. Make sure to follow up this episode by reading Kevin's weekly fab recommendation and preview article over at pitcherlist.com, which comes out every Sunday afternoon. Kevin, there's only 2 weeks left. Let me know. I'm curious to know how many teams you have in direct contention of winning it all and how many you think are going to hold on to that contention with only 2 weeks.
I got a couple. The one I'm most interested in and focused the most on is a DC, where I've been trying to chase Matty Wood down for the most of the second half of the season, and I'm close. It's very possible one of us is going to score 130 points in that league and not win it.
That's ridiculous. Nice. All right. I got one really, what's turning into being a pretty disappointing, it's an OCQ, an online championship qualifier that I was in first place for a good three quarters of the season. And I have since been knocked down to third with a good 20 point difference between me. And I believe Yancey Ian is taking that league away. But I bounced between first and second in my other OCQ, and I jumped up to third place in my TGFBI league. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Nice.
We got 2 weeks left. That means there's only two fab periods left. We're very lucky to have with us a very special guest to help us out with the second to last fab run. And that is Todd Whitestone. He's going to help us use our final fab dollars to best that we can. Todd can and should be followed on the Twitter at Telestar7. There'll be a link in our show description for that as well. You can also be heard weekly on the Monday edition of the Pool Hitter podcast alongside friend of the show, Rob DiPietro, and writes weekly his NFBC main event and fab review article over at spstreamer.com. So you should be checking that out as well. Todd breaks down the fab results across the main event every week, and I'm looking forward to talking to him about any trends he's noticed throughout the season that might be useful in budgeting our fab heading into 2022. But for now, hey, Todd, thanks for joining us. How are you doing? How's your season treating you?
The season's going pretty well. I'm not so optimistic because I'm a Yankee fan and they've been really struggling lately. So that's been a downer. But I have a few teams that are in contention. One that I think is going to win an online NFBC championship.
Nice.
And then about three or four others that are like on the edge of cashing third, second, something like that. So I think it'll be a good year. It's not first place across the board or anything like that, but I've really enjoyed it. I do partner with James Anderson from RotoWire, and he's a big help. He knows the prospects really well.
Right.
We have a good partnership going, I think. And just looking forward to the last couple of weeks. It's going to be a little tense going down the stretch.
Yeah, it always is, at least if you care enough to pay attention. And it's nice to just be able to be in that cash realm when you get to this part of the season, because for no other reason, it's just nice to know that some of your leagues can help pave the way for next year's leagues. And so you're not having to just dip in every year. You can just roll it over, if you will.
Right.
All right, Tom, I'm really happy that you're here. You can help us break down what few news and notes we do have from this week. And we've got some interesting things. And I'm probably going to add one more in here blindly for you, Kevin. It won't be so blind because I think somebody asked you about it earlier today. But we'll get into some Kansas City notes first, Kevin. The Royals placed Brady Singer and Mike Minor on the IL. So my question to you is, will the Royals go with the five starter mix the rest of the way, or can we expect to fill in starters for both Minor and Singer's place and stick with a six-man rotation through the last 2 weeks?
They have a couple of off days coming up, Kansas City Royals. With exception of the final day of the season, they can roll with a five-man rotation and them still all getting 5 days rest as if they were in a six-man rotation. So they're gonna throw Bubik's throwing tonight, Coar tomorrow. There is a doubleheader Monday, but they're gonna use Irvin Santana as a opener slash as long as they can let him go in one of the games. But Carlos Hernandez will be the Royal that gets a two-start week this coming week. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Daniel Lynch, and then the recently added John Heasley, who came up and pitched last night, and fairly decent other than the couple of two-run home runs to Kelnick that he gave up. Then they have an off day, and then they're also off the following Monday after that off day Thursday. So they can all have 5 days rest again coming into the final Sunday of the season. We haven't been told, Miner's out for the year, Keller's out for the year, but we haven't been told what Singer's issue is yet. So everybody's assuming it's something COVID-related. He could come back at any time and fill in a spot. I don't know that they'd let Daniel Lynch go on 4 days rest on that final Sunday, maybe Irvin Santana in there again. But for the most part, I think they're going to roll with the five starters.
I think that's all what we all need is just more Irvin Santana starting. Yeah. So the follow-up question, Kevin, is where is Bobby Witt and why is he not in Kansas City? I know Omaha had, I think they're like 3 or 4 games back from first place in their respective division. And they obviously have games scheduled throughout the month of September. And I think their final game is like October 2nd. So it's up with the major league schedule. Are they really holding him down there so he can help them win a AAA division championship? Or come on, give me some insider info.
As much as we joke about it, that probably does come into the consideration. We definitely won't see him this coming week. They're going on the road. They're going on the road this week. They are on a 6-game homestand for the final week of the season, which gives me the slightest bit of hope that maybe they just want some big crowds that week. But I do think those Omaha games may actually come into the equation. So it's a very slight chance, but even if we do see him, it definitely will not be until the final week because they're not going to bring him up on the road.
Sure. And here's hoping that Omaha gets eliminated then mathematically before then. I see this as if he gets called up in the last week, it's like an end credit scene of a Marvel movie. It's just that little snippet, that little preview of like what's to come next. But then you have to wait a whole another 8 months before you finally see it.
So my theory, guys, is that Bobby Witt doesn't know the way from Omaha to Kansas City.
And, he needs to ask Oliveris.
That's what I was going to say.
He's very well versed.
Edward Oliveris, he knows every coffee shop in between. I think if he just gets a ride with Edward, I think we're all set.
Yeah, there you go.
He needs to get out of the car before Edward has to turn around, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He's going to end up back in Omaha. Yeah,
exactly. All right, Todd. We will move to L.A. and Joe Maddon mentioned that he doubts Joe Adell will return for the Angels before the end of the season, and other reports have speculated that we shouldn't expect to see Mike Trout return either. So my question to you is it time to actually take a hard look at the current Angels outfielders to fill in due to the supposed lack of playing time that they're going to get?
Yeah, I have it pegged as Brandon Marsh, Juan Lagares, and Phil Gosselin as the majority of outfield starts. Luis Renjifo is available to start in the outfield, but I think he's mostly playing infield right now. All of them in NFBC, which is where I play most of my contests, are eligible in the outfield. So I think if you want to roster any of them, they're fine. I have this personal relationship with Brandon Marsh that if I pick him up, he plays poorly, and if I drop him, he plays well. So I won't tend to go to that myself, and Lagares has never impressed me as a great hitter. I'm probably not that interested in this group, but Renjifo, I think, is the guy that would interest me most. I think he has the potential to steal bases. He hasn't really shown it, and he is hitting reasonably at the moment, and I think he'll play most of the games from here on out.
If you do end up picking Marsh up anywhere, make sure you tweet that out so we are all can be aware of what to expect. Marsh 100% rostered across main event league, so not going to be an option in most 15 teamers, but in your shallower leagues, might still be out there. All right, Kevin, Michael Brantley was placed on the IL retroactive to September 12th, and Dusty Baker expects him back at the minimum of 10-day stay. But with them fighting, being locked into a playoff spot, who's to say that he doesn't get a little bit longer stay? This still means he'll be missing for at the very least the first half of next week's games, with the Astros travel to Los Angeles for a 4-game series against the Angels. Who's the flavor of the week in Houston's outfield to look for to fill in while Brantley is missing?
I think after a bit of a dry spell last week, Jake Myers has picked it up again over the past few days. He's been a little better against lefties, not huge splits, but a little better versus lefties. And if we're talking the first half of the week in an NFBC format, they do face a couple of lefties in those four games against the Angels. Other than that, Jordan Alvarez, that doesn't help us. He played a game in the outfield, another one here recently. He's had a few this season. Marco Gonzalez is back with the team. Chaz McCormick, I believe, got the start tonight. But I think for the most part, it's going to be Jake Myers, and he's performed well. He's still hitting .283, 5 home runs, 24 RBIs. That's the big part. He's really helping in the RBI category if that's where you're looking for a little bit of help and he's available. Because he is only 8% rostered in Yahoo. I know you don't need a lot of outfielders in a lot of Yahoo leagues, but even the online championship, 21%. So in 12-team leagues with 5 outfielders, he's available in almost 80%.
Yeah, I will give a special shout out. I think we'll talk about him a little bit more later on in the show, but Jose Siri is still 0% rostered across main event, and he's started almost every day this week, even before Brantley went on the IL. Of course, he's been nursing his injury prior to actually being placed, hence the retroactive placement of his IL stint to the 12th. But he's looked, with the amount of playing time that he's getting, he's been able to actually show off a little bit of what he's been showing in the minors this week. So I think we'll get into him a little bit later on, but somebody I shouted out, I think either last week or the week prior, and he hasn't done anything yet until this past week. So somebody to keep an eye on for Fab this coming week. All right, Todd, the Giants put Jake McGee on the IL with a strained oblique. So my question is, would you assume that Tyler Rogers will be the obvious replacement at closer in San Francisco, or will Gabe Kapler go back to his committee tendencies while McGee is on the shelf?
I think Tyler Rogers will get the majority of saves. He's got 12 this season. He hasn't gotten one in a while. He's pitching okay. Last couple of weeks, he has a 6 innings, a 4.5 ERA, 1.17 whip. The other guy that could get some opportunities is Dominic Leone. 7.1 innings pitched over the last 2 weeks, 0.41 whip. He's got 1 save this season. I still expect Rogers to be mostly the guy that's turned to. But I could see a different when they have matchups or when Rogers has pitched the previous day that I think Leone could get a chance. So I would say Rogers, if you can get him, would be the preferred option.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. If you're strictly looking for saves, right. I do the idea with only 2 weeks left, though, of really going after the arms that are going to, they won't hurt you anywhere. Granted, you might not get the saves, but you might. And he's not going to hurt you anywhere else based on how he's been performing, to your point, recently. And so there's something to be said about if you're going after Rogers, I would definitely make Leone your backup bid there at a very cheap price, throw a dollar at him. And him and other relievers like that aren't going to hurt you down the stretch.
Yeah. If ERA and whip is what you're looking for, then I think that's a good option for sure.
All right, Kevin. Stop me if you've heard this before, but Kevin Kiermaier went on the IL. He found a new way of getting on the IL this time, being placed on the COVID IL with general symptoms. So does Kiermaier's absence free up more regular playing time for the likes of Manuel Margot or Brett Phillips, or are the Rays not one to be trusted at all with regular playing time for pretty much anybody?
A little bit of all of those options, probably. Margot does have 430 plate appearances on the season after today, and is a nice. You're not going to get shut out for the week if you need someone in your lineup at that position. He does have 10 home runs and 13 stolen bases on the year, but it's just like you said, we don't trust the Rays. He has gone streaks this season where we haven't seen him for 3 or 4 games. He's even when, as far as we've known, he's been healthy. Brett Phillips is fascinating. We all know how fun it is to watch him play and be interviewed and pitch, but He has 13 home runs and 14 stolen bases and 274 plate appearances. He's a 30-30 guy. Not really. He's never going to do that. Well, he strikes out 38% of the time. Guy,
but yeah.
He strikes out 38% of the time this year and over 36% for his career. But versus right-handed pitching, almost all of his counting stats have come against right-handed pitching. 12 of his 13 home runs, 11 of his 14 stolen bases, 39 RBI, 43 runs scored, and only 189 plate appearances. Unfortunately, two of the three first half of this week versus Toronto are versus left-handed starters, but it is for the weekend, two of the three are against right-handed starters. So if you're in a bind, I think you could use him for the weekend. I would go with Brett Phillips. If I need somebody for the whole week, it's Manny Margot.
Yeah, Taylor Wall's also scratched from today's game as well. Granted, obviously, this is an infield situation, but it could end up affecting the entire lineup if Wall's is scratched for longer than just Saturday. It says that he was scratched for illness reasons. So who's to say that obviously that doesn't turn into a COVID IL stint for him as well. So might be more opportunities there, but also the opportunity that if Wells does go on the IL, the speculation of Vidal Brujan returning back or even Josh Lowe returning back to the Tampa lineup as well. So keep an eye on that as you're heading into your bidding on Sunday night. All right, Todd, back to Minnesota for us, which we find ways to talk about Minnesota on a regular basis here. They placed Rob Refsnyder on the IL with right elbow impingement. He had been playing pretty much every day at various outfield positions in Minnesota. So who do you see taking the majority of playing time that his injury frees up?
Yeah, I think they're going to turn back to Brent Rooker. Kepler and Buxton are fixtures, and I think Rooker was there was going away from him as PT was going down, but I think they don't have that many options left, so I think he'll play most of the time. Maybe Jake Cave will be the other guy that will cycle in. I'm not that interested in Brent Rooker. I think he's okay. He could deliver the occasional home run, but I just feel like he's not going to give you a lot of counting stats or a high batting average or anything like that. So I think the Twins are just trying to make it to the finish line. They're patching together their rotation.
Want it to be over.
Yeah, they just like they've had enough. They're winding down. But yeah, I think Rooker will be in there on most days.
That's fair. All right, Kevin, we'll go to another outfield that's a little banged up, the Cincinnati outfield. They might have thought they were getting a boost with the return of Jesse Winker a couple days ago. But of course, the baseball gods had other plans, and Winker was held out of Saturday's game after being drilled in the back on Friday and then placed right back on the IL on Sunday. In addition to missing Winker, Shogo Akiyama joined him on the IL as he continues to battle his own hamstring tightness, while Tyler Naquin was already placed on the IL with the bruised ribs. If he was placed on the IL to make room for Winker, who came back from the IL. So not a lot of fun things happening in the Cincinnati outfield. Can you show me any kind of ray of sunshine in the Cincy outfield that could be a reliable piece of fantasy roster for the coming week or, you know, the final week?
No, I really don't think so. We've had this question a few times throughout the season, and I always bring up Aristides Aquino. I'd like to think that he could do something. They do have a 7-game week all at home, and three of them are against left-handed starters as a last resort. I could see trying him there. DeShields isn't doing anything at all in his appearances in center field. He scored one run, zero stolen base attempts, so we're not getting anything out of him. Max Schrock has been getting some playing time. He might get a little bit of run. You look at his slash line, 321, 375, 481. All right, what do we got here? Two home runs, one stolen base, none of that coming recently. And he's had 32 of his his 88 plate appearances the last couple of weeks. Most recent home run was August 1st. They did call up TJ Friedl on Saturday. And at AAA in 448 plate appearances, he's hitting 264, 12 home runs, 36 RBI, 59 runs scored, and 13 stolen bases. That got me excited till I remembered how often the Reds attempt to steal bases. They're trailing by a lot, last place in MLB with 29 total stolen bases on the year. So there's really not much here.
You're right. We do talk about, we have mentioned the Cincinnati outfield quite a bit throughout the, and not in good ways. And almost every time you do bring up Aquino. And I will say, as the season progresses, I've noticed like your response about Aquino has definitely dipped every time. You're like, oh, I'm really excited to put Aquino into my lineup now. Or maybe I can do something. And the last resort, you can use Aquino. Yeah. All right, Todd, we'll go over to New York and mention some good news. Brandon Nimmo returned to the Mets outfield, starting in center field and batting second on Friday. Does his return essentially end Kevin Pillar's usefulness, making him an easy drop on this Sunday, or do you see him squeezing himself into the lineup somehow in the final 2 weeks for the Mets?
Yeah, I think Pillar, in terms of fantasy value, is pretty much shot. But I think the Mets will put him on the bench, put him in for defensive replacement, maybe pinch run him or something. But the main outfield, I think, will be Nimmo in center, Conforto in right, McNeil in left. And I think that's what they're going to go with. In most cases, maybe Pillar will start one or two games. But unless there's another injury, I think Kevin Pillar, I personally like him. I think he's a useful player in terms of a fill-in, but he's not going to get enough playing time, I don't think, and for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that one. And if I'm not mistaken, I'll just add one little piece of news just for everybody to keep an eye on. I believe Shane Boz is supposed to make his MLB debut, I think, on Monday. Right. So in leagues where he was not drafted, which are going to be plenty of them, he obviously won't be available in the NFBC format. But if you're playing in a format where he's out there, Shane Boz has been doing great things in AAA. I saw the Durham Bulls put pictures of their recent rings. So I think that they've already clinched theirs. I don't think the AAA championship ring is a concern there, hence him being called up and not being used at that level. So keep an eye on your situation. There's always a chance that he was drafted in your league and dropped a long time ago. And so he very well, in those situations, he'd be available. So as we always say, just check. It takes 2 seconds.
Right. Right.
All right. That is going to wrap us our news section of the pod. As always, we try to keep it focused on news that might affect your FAB considerations for this Sunday. And we may have left out some other important items worth knowing. To stay up to date on all of those news and notes, you should be listening to the Daily First Pitch podcast hosted by Nick Pollock during the week. And of course, Alex Fast with Fast Pitch on the weekends. It's 15 minutes full of the most important things that happened in baseball the day before and is a must listen every day to stay up to date with what's going on across the league, including bullpen adjustments, big time hitter performances, and starting pitching spotlights. And as I usually say, speaking of spotlights, let's talk about basically, Todd, what you've been doing all year, and that is tracking the FAB of the NFC main event. Of course, you've been tracking the standings as well, going over who's moving up, who's moving down, who's looking like they're going to hold on to everything. I'm going to focus a little bit on the FAB aspect of that, though. And I'm curious to know, in your words, basically, you've been doing this every single week. You've been doing a great job. And if anybody out there is listening has not read any of Todd's work, you're really missing out. You've been missing out all season. Go back and read some of Todd's old articles, listen to them, break it down with Rob over on the Pull Hitter podcast as well. But you've done a really good job of just like checking out what trends we're seeing, what who's winning, who's not winning, and like the differences we're seeing across leagues and the reason why people are being dropped, adding in your 2 cents there, of course. But my questions to you revolve around, what have you seen in a broader picture? Like, what trends have you seen throughout the course of the season? And you can break that down however you want. But I'm curious to see what you've seen and how, what we can take away from the trends we've seen. This, of course, the first full season we've had in 2 years. Right. So I'm sure a lot of people who play fantasy every year for a long time, even for them, like a lot of this is just having to be relearned after the different season we had in 2020. Tell me the bigger picture things that you've noticed throughout the course of the season.
Sure. So there's two main things. One is the FAB sort of trends. And the reason I picked the main event is because it's a sort of a closed loop of almost all players that are tremendously engaged. They don't wind off after two-thirds of the season and stop trying. Everybody invests a lot of money. And so it's a little bit, I think, more true rather than some leagues where people lose interest if they're trailing and things like that. And it's 43 specific leagues. It's not an incredibly huge number like some other contests. So I like that aspect of it. So the thing about fab that I learned, and I think this is applicable across more leagues than just this one, but it was just easier to find with a finite set, is that in the beginning of the season, people bid more than you would ever expect. And this has been true for years. I've played bigger contests for years, and I'm always surprised by how much people bid right at the beginning because they want guy letter A or letter B. And that lasts about through about 6 weeks of the season. And then people start to get a sense of, I've spent a fair amount of money, I need to dial it back. So what I was trying to figure out, guys, was that point where people were pulling back. And if you held back yourself, you still need to bid, of course. But if you held back, when would you have the advantage? And I think it's about week seven is when you can bid about $25 per player and generally win. I'm not talking about the hot rookie or the guy that's been anointed a closer or something like that. So obviously, that's different. But almost every team, and this stayed constant throughout the whole season, won 1.8 bids per week. That stayed constant all the whole year. It was just the amounts that changed. So in the beginning, people were bidding $50, $40 per winning bid. And then in about week seven, it dropped to about in the 20s. So I think if you stay lower in the beginning and you won some players, but hopefully you didn't bid $300 on a guy, then you could start bidding $25 to $30, get your share of players, and have that advantage the rest of the year. You could wind down gradually as they were going downwards because they had little money. And you could go down from 25 to 20 to 15. But you need to wait that 6 weeks, and you need to still push yourself to bid a fair amount about week seven or eight, because you can't bid nothing and get guys. But there you have the advantage. So that was the key point to me, was when do you have the advantage for holding back? You can't just say, I'm going to try to husband my resources forever. You don't want to do that. Then you don't have no advantage at all. So you don't want to save money, but you want to start spending heavily week 7, 8, 9, especially obviously on the guys that you need. So that was one takeaway, and you can ask questions about that. But the second one was, I tracked the top four pickups for all of the main event owners. So the widest pickups. So the guy that was added in 43 leagues, the top four guys each week. And I tried to grade them after 3 weeks of, were they great pickup, were they medium, or were they bad? And only about one out of every four was a great pickup, or even a really good one. Even all these really good players who are putting a lot of time and effort into it are only hitting about one out of every four mm-hmm. of the widest pickups. And so you have to go with that in mind. Even the guy that you think is really good and he's got a really good chance, I would venture to say it's a one out of four shot. And that will help you keep your bids lower in most cases. So those are the two takeaways that I had. And I think it does help people, not just in the main event, but generally in any fab league that you might participate in.
Kevin, what Todd's talking about is a lot of what you were talking about at the beginning of the season, as far as what your plan was for budgeting and having X amount of dollars spent per week, regardless of not regardless of whether or not you needed a player or not, but like always staying active and not going over, kicking yourself over your shoes or whatever the phrase is. To, you said it every other week. I'll probably bid on this guy, but I probably won't get him, just to avoid exactly what Todd's talking about, just overspending, especially in the early going. Did you notice, at least in your fab leagues, a similar situation that Todd's talking about on a grander scale? Obviously, he's looking at 43 different leagues, and to best of my knowledge, you're not playing in 43 different leagues. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But did you notice a similar trends in your leagues?
Absolutely. As the season goes on, making my bids about how I had done all along for the, like Todd is saying, $25 to $30, I start getting those players that I wasn't getting earlier in the season. I think right. There's a great correlation in my mind to the 2 points Todd made. The 1.8 players per team per week for main event players remaining steady leads me to believe that, that those players putting all this time and energy into this aren't just going out to get a player because a player is good. They have to have a need for that player. And that's the key to me when, yeah, would it have been nice to add Jared Kelnick when he came up, not knowing how he started, right? Yeah, it would be nice. But if I have, if I'm happy with my outfield, there's no reason to overbid on that player. So I see a correlation there, at least in my mind.
And so, Todd, when you're seeing one question that I had about the teams that did spend a lot of money early on to get the Naquins and the Merriweathers, and we saw those $300 or $400 bids early on. You mentioned how the most added players, and you looked at that. Did you look at the players who got spent up quite a bit and whether or not they actually produced, or was there a trend of just people going after the hot hand and regretting it just a week later?
I didn't segregate it that way, Adam, that here's the expensive players and therefore how did they do? But I do think I captured it because those were generally the players that were picked up in the most leagues anyway. So I don't think that I missed Alek Manoah or any of those guys that really had a big splash. But the one takeaway for me, that just to reemphasize a little bit, is that I tended to make two mistakes. One was I tended to not bid enough at the very beginning, and then I would get frustrated, and then I would up my bids more at the very point at which everybody else was pulling back. So I would tend to overbid at that exact moment. That's a mistake. So you're costing yourself money and you're not maintaining any edge that you might have in FAB for not getting players in early. So at least if those guys that are spending a lot are getting players, there's something to be said for that. When you're just bidding and winning by $100, that's no good at all. So I think you have to learn from your errors that way. And then you can see how it's generally trending. You might still lose a player that you wanted, but you, as Kevin said, you got to have a lot of backup bids. You got to be prepared to get outfielder number 4 instead of outfielder number 1. And sometimes that guy's going to be just as good or better.
Especially in a short sample. Yeah, I totally agree. That's a good point. Did you notice any types of players or stats that players provided that were more popular or the went for higher dollar amounts? Were people going out like early on in the season or midway through the season, people looking at more power or more speed? People always talk about speed. They always talk about closers. We saw a lot of high bid closers, especially in the first month of the season. But was there anything specific that kind of stood out in that realm?
There's two things that cause people to really bid high. One is if a guy gets at least one homer and one steal during the week, especially if it's like Friday or Saturday. If he does it in the same game,
recency then
it's
like bias,
definitely a big bid at that point. And then, of course, closers, guys that gets a save. And I have proposed to NFBC that they have a separate FAB budget for Cincinnati closers. Another extra $1,000 would have been good, you know. But yeah, I think if you just calculate Toronto and Cincinnati closer bids, you'd have a huge amount.
It's so, too many to bid on the entire bullpen. That would be
Get six guys.
In fantasy football where you just have the whole defense.
Yeah, every guy in the bullpen. But yeah, so that was really the main thing. And so people have brought this up before, but if you can come out of the draft with at least two guys that are getting some saves, even if they're not Liam Hendricks, not at the top of the list, but getting some saves, you don't have to participate in this big Julian Merriweather or Michael Lorenzen fiascos that took place and really bid too much for getting it's up in the air at the time you bid, but it turned out in those cases to be nothing. So yeah, I think that's the key. But even if I would even go further that even if you needed saves and it was the fourth week, I would say bid lower. You don't get the guy. You're going to be able to control it a little better in week 7 or 8. And don't worry about it right there.
So you heard it from Todd. If you spent all that money on a closer early on, shame on you.
I
think we've all been there at some point or another.
Yeah, so I don't want to say that I figured this out in advance.
Todd, like you mentioned, you've really focused on the main event and did that for obvious reasons. Like you said, people are spending a lot of money and they're spending a lot of time because of that money. Time is valuable. And so the data that you're getting out of this is probably a little cleaner than if you, you know, were looking up a bunch of home leagues or right. even the $50, you know, OCQs or anything like that. I know I play in two OCQs and I know half the league checked out. Well, I don't know. I don't know these people personally, but it sure looked like it. And I mentioned to you off air, I was watching the main event and TGFBI fab pretty regularly every week for the first half of the season. And I saw a major dip in the amount of bids, the dollar amount of both in dollar amount and just quantity of bids being made in those leagues. And they're both 15 teamers. They're both NFBC. And really quickly, like after that 6 or 7 week plateau that you talk about. And so I can appreciate why you really focused on the main event. But I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on those listening that don't play in the main event. Can they utilize this information that you're providing to make better bids and budget their own fab in their Fantrax leagues or their CBS leagues or their home leagues or wherever they're playing, if at all? Maybe it's not translatable. What do you think?
I do think it's translatable for any fab league because I think there's a point, it might come earlier in different leagues, but I think there's a point at which people start pulling back. And you might miss it by a week, but you want to be observant for that sort of fall off. Once you see that, you up your bids a little bit, if you've been able to hold back, and you will be able to get more and more of the players you're seeking. So I do think it's applicable. I'm not sure you can be as finely tuned with the exact week. And I'm sure even the main event is going to vary to some extent. But yeah, I do think you want to be looking for that cliff where people start to drop off. And you can make a mistake by either bidding too much at the beginning, number one, or by not upping your bids in about week 7, 8, 9, 10. So I've done both errors, so I can say that's true. And I think it's going to be true for anybody in any fab league. Of course, there are differences. Some leagues have $0 bids and all kinds of different approaches, trading fab. But for the general majority of leagues that use fab, I think this will be applicable.
That's great because I play in plenty of Yahoo leagues that the fab works completely differently. And daily fab versus weekly fab are completely different beasts.
I'm sure.
Yeah, one thing I definitely noticed, I think it's going to echo some things you said. When I was watching the TGFBI and the main event leagues, there got to a point in the season, again, closer to that, you know, 6 or 7 week period that you're talking about, and how the main event, you'd see a guy go in 43 leagues and he would go in 10 TGFBI leagues. But the following week, the remaining 19 TGFBI leagues would pick up that player. Right. So it did definitely seem, especially like two star pitchers for the following week, which we will talk about a little bit later on in the episode, they would go a lot more regularly in main event, whereas the two star pitchers that were going for this coming week were already gone in the main event. Right. And they would be very much more popular in TGFBI. Definitely a different monster. I agree with you a lot that the main event's a really good place to look when you're really trying to figure out what's going to happen. It's almost like looking into the future for other leagues, just because there are a lot of players in there. They're not all great, but they're all focused.
they're all paying attention. There have been times when I'm interested in a player and he hasn't really done very much, and I'm like, hey, this guy, I'm gonna sneak this guy past.
And not happening.
90% of the time it doesn't happen. Usually there's a fairly aggressive bid on a guy. At least one other guy in your league is tuned into it. I think that's another mistake that you can make is, oh, nobody will bid on this guy, I'll put in $2. And that doesn't usually work.
It is nice to see, though, that there are plenty of backup bids or runner-up bids in a main event. Like the worst, especially this time of year, you see it so many. Like I've got a big budget in one of my leagues where I'm just throwing money at anybody that I want. And I know I'm going to get them because I have pretty much the hammer still in at least one league. And it just feels so wrong to like win a player for $55 and see no backup bid.
Yeah. You didn't need the money then. You probably,
exactly.
Hindsight is 20/20, but there was a point at which it would have been better to spend that. And the key is figuring out when that would have been.
If you got that crystal ball, we'll meet after the show.
Okay.
All right. Like I mentioned, we have a lot of, if you've got a lot of money to spend, you got to spend it, right? You can't take it with you. It doesn't, it's not like you jump up a couple points if you have the highest fab at the end of the, at the end of the year. Make sure you're spending that fab. So I want to have a follow-up question to this conversation with you guys. And Kevin, I get your opinion here first, but if you are in contention, like you're talking about the leagues that you're in the top three, I'm in a couple, Todd's talking about a couple that he's into. How are you attacking the remainder of your fab? Are you going after specific categories? Are you in the leagues that you have an overall component? Are you focused on the overall versus your league? And what, how do you make those decisions about what categories to really focus on? For example, I have one league where I'm like third from the bottom in stolen bases. But I have, this is an easy one, by the way, but I also have a 25 home run lead at the top of the league. So I've literally, I'm literally benching guys like Franmil Reyes and Schwarber and Pete Alonso. And I'm plugging in as many like $1 speed guys that are going to hopefully steal a base or score a couple of runs, hoping that I can jump up, knowing that I don't necessarily have, you know, a chance, quote, hopefully knock on wood, of losing that category. And if I do, I have another week to where I can, you know, make an adjustment if I absolutely have to. But where is that line for you when you're really focusing on a specific category?
It, like with anything, I always make that preface when I say something like this. It really is league dependent. Depending on the number of categories and the leads. And we talked about the last couple of weeks. Don't forget about the guys behind you either. Right. Definitely don't forget about that. I am in one league we mentioned off the air before we started. I am single digit strikeouts behind the player I'm chasing for first place. And I have about a 6-save lead on the guy behind me, and I'm not catching anybody else in saves. So I am very happy for the past couple of weeks at Josh Hader being my only closer. He'll keep that 6-save cushion I have for me at the spot we are in the pack. The guys behind me don't have guys like him, or they'd already be ahead of me.
Sure.
And throwing 8 starters out there, and I've been consistently gaining in the strikeout category. If I make that pass, that's 2 points I'm gaining. The point I gain and the point he loses when I pass him.
Yeah, that's so, a perfect scenario right there. Yeah,
perfect. Yeah. He's in a big cluster of saves and doesn't have a guy that gets consistent saves. For the past couple of weeks, he's had to throw 3 guys out there that he's just hoping might get one. So I'm confident I'll pass him in strikeouts. That type, that is an example of a scenario. I think as far as fab goes, if I have more fab dollars than my competitor, I may be picking up players I think he needs rather than who I need. If I have a spot, especially next week, you can drop everybody. Nobody else is picking them up. So that's there all types of different scenarios you got to remember.
Yeah, I think especially for those listening who play in a lot of different leagues on different platforms, this might seem like a lot, but no, like just really knowing what's going on in your league and not just focusing on your own roster, I think is really important. Like Kevin was talking about. Todd, do you have a specific plan in motion in the final 2 weeks where how you're attacking certain categories?
Yeah, I agree 100% with Kevin, first of all. But I think for any league that you're really close on, whether it's for a money position or first place or whatever, you need to do an analysis of the categories that you are participating in. And what you do, and I can answer questions on Twitter if people have them. We probably don't have time to go through the whole thing, but you need to figure out how many points you can possibly gain in the last 2 weeks and how many you can possibly lose. And as Kevin said, the right calculation when it's the guy just ahead of you, especially for first place, is to count that as possibly 2 and not 1. So then you add it up. So let's say in runs scored, you can gain 2 points reasonably. And then there's one guy that can pass you. That would be a total of 3. And then you go through all the categories that way and see which one has the highest number. And that will tell you where you need to spend your resources, where you need to focus. The ideal situation, of course, is one that you're describing, Adam, which is that, oh, you can go all starters because you need just wins and Ks, or you can go all closers or mostly closers because you need mostly saves. And that's easy. the harder situation is what most people find, which is they can gain or lose in either place. But yeah, it's you want to see, do I need the speed? Do I need the power? Who can I pick up? And if there's a category that is 6 points in that calculation and everything else is 2, then you try to get anyone that can help you there. And I think that's the right way to approach it, especially with a couple of weeks to go, is that everybody has limited dollars. You want to spend, you want to get a power guy that might strike out a ton. And because that's the home run and RBI categories are the main thing for you.
Yeah. And I'll also just, we talk about this a lot, especially in the second half, but especially with only 2 weeks left, you've got to look to see who's got the opportunity ahead of them. So you don't need somebody that has a 5-game, like you don't need a hitter that only has 5 games because you're not going to start them in the first half of the week. Maybe you get those 3 games over the weekend, but you need to maximize as many plate appearances as you can, no matter what category you're going after. And if you can get leadoff hitters still in the game, if Josh Harrison is still available in your league, which he's not in most NFBC formats, but these guys who moved into new roles on their new teams recently, you got to be aware of that and make sure that you're maximizing those at bats. If you're looking for wins and Ks, it's like it almost doesn't matter how bad a starter could possibly be. If they have 2 starts and they can get you up those counting stats, you got to take that hit, or at least you can roll more dice with ratios later on if you're desperate for those counting stats. So know where.
Yeah, Phil DeSoto tweeted the other day that in a DC, he's starting 2 injured catchers to protect his batting average. And I heard Rob talking the other day earlier in the week on your guys' show, Todd, about he's got 7 relievers going in a league.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think that's a great situation to be in when he knows that's what he needs. He can only lose a point or two in Ks and wins, and saves is where he can get 3 or 4 points. So that's... Yeah, that's, I like that situation better because it's clear. For me, I'm a little more mushy in terms of what I should go for in most cases. But yeah, I think you got to keep tabs on it. And also, you can check what your competitors are doing. Let's say Ks is the important category. Go to the guys that are just ahead of you. Are they starting 9 starting pitchers? Or are they starting, as Kevin was saying, are they starting 3 closers because they have to? And that'll tell you what you need to do a little clearer than if you just assume what they might be doing.
Yeah, these are the things that you really need to be doing, especially this time of year. And this is why people complain about doing FAB every week, is because it does, if you do it right, or if you do it with a lot of dedication, it can take a long time. And yeah. I've heard people tell me, like, FAB doesn't take that long. You just go in, you find the guys you want, and you put bids on them, and you're done. Sure, if that's what you want to do.
It doesn't have to take that long, for sure.
Yeah, but if you're really going to dive in and make sure that your FAB, what little FAB you have left, goes the furthest, you really got to put in that extra effort, especially with only a month left in the season, or now only 2 weeks left in the season.
Yeah, and I would say that in the 43 main event leagues, I think the majority of people are still grinding, going, even guys in 8th, 9th, 10th place don't generally just stop. And so I think that's why I like looking at the main event, is because it just doesn't tail off.
Yeah, also, they keep tabs on that stuff. NFBC keeps tabs on where you can look up any player and where they finished all of their leagues. Right. It's all in there. It's easy to find. You can find it. And I think that when you do join a main event league, everybody's going to want to know. If they've never heard your name before, they're going to look up your history and they're going to be like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. This girl knows what she's doing. And it's just street cred, if nothing else. All right, let's go through. Now, after you've thought about that and how it affects your league and what you need to do next, let's give the people some options as they are looking for these categories that they're going to be focused into. We will stick with our standard order. Of course, we'll start with our hitters, and we'll start off with power. Some guys that might be able to knock in a couple home runs next week, maybe chip in a couple extra RBIs. And if you're desperate for that, if you can sit all your stolen base guys, all your speed guys, and you want to double up on some of these guys, let's see who we have going. Todd, why don't you give me a couple names, regardless of format? You need to let us know where they're going to be available and where they're not going to be available, of course. But who are you liking for this week in the power category?
So the power category, I have a couple of Miami Marlins, which is remarkable because they've been one of the worst hitting teams all year. But in the outfield, they're now playing mostly Jesus Sanchez and Brian De La Cruz, who are both, and I've looked at the last 2 weeks of stats, not because it's completely predictive, of course, but because if they're hitting well over the last 2 weeks, I feel more confident that the manager wants to play them. And as you mentioned, Adam, playing time is king right now, especially. Jesus Sanchez, the last 2 weeks, 12 for 47 with 6 homers and 14 RBIs. Brian De La Cruz, 14 for 43, which is .326 with 3 homers and 8 RBIs. And these guys are available in 12 teamers in the NFBC, at least 44% for Sanchez, 22 for De La Cruz. And in the main event, it's 195, so it's not going to help you much there. But these are guys that may be available in a lot of Yahoo, Fantrax leagues, and I think can really help you if you need a couple of homers.
Yeah, we mentioned, it's really important to see who's getting that extra playing time, we talk about also, like, you shouldn't pay for production that's already happening. You should pay for production you think is going to happen. At this stage of the year, though, it's if they're hitting now, right? Like, you have to assume they're going to keep hitting.
moving forward.
I think it's a little bit stable.
They'll be in the lineup, which is the key, half of the battle.
Absolutely. All right, Kevin, you got a couple names here as well. Why don't you jump in with, let's hit up your less available player first, and then we'll get into some deeper options.
Yeah, it was quite a while back. I think it was when Paul Sporer joined us. We talked quite a bit about Austin Hayes at the time, and he's performed very well, especially recently. Like Todd was saying, this keeps you in the lineup. We don't get credit for these, but they're going well. That is something I like this time of year, a guy that's going well. And over the past couple of weeks, .298, 7 home runs, 16 RBI, 10 runs scored. I know the reason he's so much more available in Yahoo leagues is a lot of them are 3 outfielder leagues, but he's available in 2/3 of them. And he is a top 30 outfielder in fantasy baseball going right now, the way he's going right now. So he should be rostered and started in those leagues as well. He's available in 1 TGFBI league and a couple of online championships, but he is 100% rostered in the main event. But Austin Hayes, the way he's going right now, he's easily a top 30 outfielder and I think should be in a lineup in every league.
Yeah, and you talk about Yahoo, like a good majority of Yahoo leagues are head-to-head leagues, and they're in playoffs right now, whether you're in the first week or you're hitting your championship week heading into next week. You just want whoever's going to help you win that championship, regardless. The name value is completely thrown out the window.
And the kicker for Hayes, 7-game week, 3 of them at Philadelphia, 4 of them home at Camden.
It's true. Baltimore had a nice little September schedule altogether. And I was holding on to Jorge Mateo in one league just because I wanted that doubleheader and all those starts. And of course, obviously he's on the IL now and gone for the year. Luckily, quote unquote, I already lost that league. So that showed you I didn't need you anyway. Todd, let's see. Do you have a couple names on here that are a little bit more readily available, especially in your deeper formats? Who do you like from this list?
So I guess the two guys I'll mention that might be available in deeper leagues are the catcher Keibert Ruiz, who has a lot of potential. He didn't hit well at the beginning when he was called up, but lately he is showing a little bit more pop. And most players, if it's a 2-catcher league, can always use a 2nd catcher. He's definitely got power. He's shown that in the minors, and I expect him to be able to hit reasonably well in the last 2 weeks. And I think Washington will let him play to get the experience. So I don't think there's any argument about that. And the other guy would be Lewin Diaz, again from Miami. I didn't realize I was doing so many Marlins, but they should have called these guys up earlier, maybe.
Yes.
But Diaz, he has power. He's got 2 homers over the last 2 weeks. He's got a couple RBIs. I think he's going to get regular run. And if you're really desperate at the corner, I think he could be a guy to throw in there and maybe give you a little bit of pop.
Nice. All right. And then, Kevin, any other deeper options in the power department that you're looking at?
Yeah, my deep option, we've talked about quite a few guys from the Cubs over the past couple of weeks. The Cubs waited till they traded away their stars, and then they started hitting. Matt Duffy is rostered in 21% of the main event leagues, but available everywhere else. And he's got 4 home runs over the past couple of weeks, hitting .316, 10 RBI. He's even stolen a couple bases to to throw in there for you. Six home games at Wrigley, and this time of year, I think Wrigley gets kind of, as a ballpark, it gets talked about incorrectly in both directions sometimes, but this time of year, it is the time of year that the ball flies out of Wrigley.
Yeah, it's hot. It's hot in the Midwest and yep. Coming off the lake and all that. That's very true. That whole friendly confines, everybody yep. uses that term however they feel as though it's going to help their narrative. All right, a lot of power options out there for you guys to keep a lookout for. So check your leagues, see if any of these guys are available. A lot of them have some good opportunities ahead of them as well. So let's move into our speed category. Todd, I'll start off with you. Who's going to steal me some bases this coming week?
Mm-hmm. The two guys I like that are in that are more widely owned already are Lane Thomas, who's 100% owned in 15s, but only 55% in 12s. And he's been batting leadoff the last couple of weeks. He's hitting .298 over that span with 13 runs scored, 3 homers and a steal. And I think he can steal more. I think he would be allowed to run if the opportunity arose. So he'd be one guy. And then the second guy that's really just a steals play solely would be Leody Taveras. He's plays for Texas. He's hit a little over 200. He has a steal. But again, you just plug him in the lineup and then he might steal you 3 bases in a game. Unfortunately, that's the way it goes. It doesn't come out on a regular output. But if you're really desperate, I would say he's more of a play that way. If you can afford to roster a better hitter that might have a few less steals, I'd certainly go with Lane Thomas. I think he's going to hit for more power and hit for more average.
Leody is still batting leadoff for the Rangers. Still going to have that opportunity ahead of them. And we talk about it all the time. Texas likes to run, or at least they did in the first half of the year. And they let anybody who has any kind of ability run typically. Leody has plenty of it. All right, Kevin, do you have anybody in mind for some stolen bases or some runs scored this coming week?
Yeah. I like a couple of guys on the same two teams that Todd just mentioned, that surprisingly in Washington, when Lane Thomas began leading off, Alcides Escobar just slipped to the 2 spot and he's scoring runs with a .286 average. Doesn't attempt a lot of stolen bases anymore, but runs scored can be hard to come by. There's not a whole lot of 2-hole hitters playing every day out there available on the waiver wire. Right. And he is well rostered in main events, 81%, 39% TGFBI in 12 team leagues, including online championships. He's not rostered anywhere, only 4% in the online championship. So I really like Alcides Escobar for runs scored. For steals, we've talked about him last week. He had stolen 5 bases in 6 games. Yonny Hernandez hasn't stolen a base this week, but he's still available. He's 91% rostered in main events. A lot of availability elsewhere. He is still playing most every day. He was out of the lineup on Saturday, but is playing most every day. Moved to the bottom of the order with Taveras at the top now. But I'd still be willing to throw him out there if I solely needed stolen bases.
Alcides has been a really help in batting average, too. It's become somewhat amazing. I never thought of him as a high batting average guy, but over the last, I'd say, month and a half, he's had a really strong batting average.
Yeah, I think a lot of these names too, you just, they give you the opposite name value that you normally, like the reason why you hold on to guys for so long, like the Cody Bellingers and even Kelenic and what have you, is the name value. And right. A guy like Escobar, it's like, he gives you the opposite name value. And you're like, I really don't want to pick him up. I don't care how good he's doing.
Right.
And you got to throw that stuff out the window right. With such small amount of time left. And if you're desperate for those runs, if he's in that 2-hole, like Kevin said, and he's hitting every day, get them in there. Yeah. Simple as that. And you're going to be able to get them because nobody has any money left.
Listen, that 2-hole, he's got 10 RBIs the last couple of weeks as well.
That amazing. Is. That's nice. Amazing. The run scored hitting with Soto after him, that's not surprising. But the RBIs, that's a little that's a little surprising.
Well, his batting average is really high, so he's hitting singles at a regular clip. I mean,
I guess I'm more surprised at the bottom of Washington's order is getting on base for him to knock those guys
true.
In.
That's true. Yeah.
Anybody else, guys, that you're looking at that, regardless of availability, if they're out there, there's somebody you're looking at?
I had 2 other guys that were more widely available. One was Lurie Garcia for the White Sox, who's he's in the NFBC, he's eligible like every position imaginable.
Yes.
And he's been hitting .366 over the last 2 weeks with two homers and a steal. He really could be a guy that you plug in anywhere. And Tony La Russa is not consistent about who he plays, but I think he's kind of likes guys like Lourdes Garcia because they're scrabblers and they play hard. And so I think he could get a lot of playing time down the stretch as they buy some time for Yoan Moncada and some of these other guys.
La Russa, I think, is out for a couple of games. So there'll be somebody else managing that lineup for the next couple of games. He got suspended for 3 games for
the White Sox. He won't be calling the shots because Billy Hamilton was playing right field.
That's
true. Here's a good quote is, when you have an opportunity to get Billy Hamilton's bat in the lineup, you can't turn it down.
No.
So anyway, the other guy that I would mention is Tony Kemp for Oakland. And he also can pop an occasional homer and a steal. He's batting .344 over the last 2 weeks. So again, he's eligible at second and in the outfield in NFBC at least. And he's only 4% owned in the 12s and 23 in the 15s. So either of those guys, I think, who knows about steals? They have the opportunity to maybe give you a steal or two. So if that's what you need, I think they could work.
I agree. And going back to Garcia, just as a reminder, Andrew Vaughn being on the IL obviously does open up that extra availability for Garcia to get in the lineup on a regular basis. He's started 5 of the last 6 games. He only missed 1 game against the lefty recently on Friday. So definitely getting plenty of at-bats.
Yeah, with all the different guys that are banged up and missing time, Lourdes Garcia could lead the White Sox in plate appearances the rest of the way because he'll give all of them spells.
Yeah, especially with Tim Anderson, who's not expected to play every day for the rest of the season.
Right.
All right. Well, we talked a lot about these guys who have good opportunity heading into the last 2 weeks. Let's go into some schedule notes, and then let me get you guys to take on a couple extra players that have really good opportunities ahead of themselves. First and foremost, there are quite a bit of teams that have a 7-game slate coming into the week, with some caveats. So I'll just go down the list real quick. Baltimore, Toronto, White Sox, Cleveland, Kansas City, Houston, the Angels, Oakland, Seattle, Texas, Atlanta, Philly, Washington, Cincinnati, Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, St. Louis, and Arizona all have at least 7 games, with the White Sox having 8 games because of their doubleheader on Thursday. Cleveland has 2 doubleheaders with Monday and Thursday giving them 9 games. Kansas City has a doubleheader on Monday, giving them 7 games despite the Thursday off day. And St. Louis has a doubleheader on Friday against the Cubs, giving St. Louis 8. And then the Cubs get 6 games despite having 2 off days themselves. Only 2 teams out there with a 5-game slate, and that is the Boston Red Sox and the New York Mets. No doubleheaders to save them this coming week. No makeup games. Colorado will be home all week after a long road trip. They're off Monday, and then they have a 3-game set against the Dodgers and followed by a 3-game set against the Giants. So not great matchups, but love to see that it's in Colorado. There are 2 National League teams that travel to an American League stadium this week, so they will gain the extra hitter in their lineup. The Mets have 2 at Boston, and Miami has 3 at Tampa Bay over the weekend. 2 American League teams travel to the National League, so they'll obviously have to see their pitcher hitting for the most of the game. Minnesota has 2 at the Cubs Tuesday and Wednesday, and then Baltimore starts off their week with a 3-game set in Philadelphia. So things to keep an eye on, whether or not you lose a couple of at-bats going into a National League stadium, or you've got some guys that you're eyeing on the Giants going into Colorado. Lots of things to consider. So with all those things to consider, Kevin, who do you like to get really good matchups coming up this coming week?
One thing I do want to mention that's looking a week ahead, as Todd Zola has brought up a couple of times recently, next Monday, the 27th, there are only 2 games. So if you're in daily leagues, the guys on those 4 teams, you might want to grab a couple of them this week in your fab, because everybody will be after them next week to get a couple of extra players for the final week of the season in daily change leagues. One of them would be Alcides Escobar that we were just talking about. So he's an opportunity guy here for me. And then the Giants lefties. We know the Giants are the new Tampa with how they move guys around, how they platoon, even on a nightly basis, inning by inning basis, guys coming in and out of the games. 5 of their 6 games this week, are against right-handed starters, including two of their three games at Colorado. So guys like Wade Jr., universally owned in 15-team leagues. Yastrzemski, universally owned in the 15-teamers. But they are available in some shallower leagues. So like you like to say, check. Same with Brandon Belt. The one that's a bit more available, even in some 15-teamers, Tommy La Stella. He's 84% rostered in the main event, but only half of TGFBI leagues have him rostered, and only 13% Yahoo and 10% of the 12-team online championships. So I take a look at all of them. Just make sure that they're not already rostered. And the Giants lefties have a pretty good week ahead, I would think.
Yeah, and what's nice about what you mentioned, that there's only two games on that on next Monday, not obviously not tomorrow as you're listening to this, but the following Monday, is that three out of those four teams that are playing have seven-game slates this week. So it's nice that you'll get plenty of at-bats this week as well. Yeah. You have Oakland traveling to Seattle, and then, of course, Washington, as Kevin mentioned, moving on to Colorado on that Monday. So those are the only four teams playing those. All of them except for Colorado have a seven-game slate this coming week as well. So keep an eye on those.
And their sticks are all at home, so they're fine too.
Yes, they, nothing to complain about there. And then they start off with three more at home the following week. Todd, anybody out there that you're looking at that has a good, either good matchups, or they're playing a weak opponent or weak pitching staff, or just they're in a nice ballpark?
Sure. So I do agree with Kevin about the Giants. And also one thing to note is that the second week, which looking at the matchups for 2 weeks out is always a little dicey, but it looks like they're facing almost all righties even in the second week. So that would mean that you could use those players for 2 weeks, not just one. But the two guys I had in mind that are playing a lot more and playing well are J.P. Crawford, shortstop for Seattle. He's hitting 300 and with 12 runs scored, two homers, nine RBIs, 54% owned in 12s and 98% in 15s. And then for deeper leagues, Luis Garcia, second baseman for Washington. Again, he gets the benefit of that Monday game next week. And he's only 4% owned in 12s and 56% in 15s. And I think he's starting to come around. He hit poorly at the very beginning, but he's got a couple homers in the last 2 weeks. He did steal a base, so he's capable of that as well. So I think those are two guys you can look at that also hit usually near the top of the lineup for their respective teams.
Yeah, always good to see how many at-bats. We talk about it. We've talked about it a couple times on this one episode. How many at-bats are they going to get you? So these are all great names. All right, a lot of good bats that we talked about. Let's move on to some pitching options, namely the counting stats, wins and Ks. If you're looking in that direction, Todd, who are you looking at to rack up a couple extra counting stats in the pitching categories?
So I think there's three guys that I found that are not that widely owned. Chris Bassett, I think, is back. So he's only owned in about 59% of 12s and 67% of 15s. He's a quality pitcher if he's okay after that terrible accident. The guy that's really been amazing over the last few weeks is Eric Lauer of Milwaukee. He's only 48% owned in 12s. He's all owned in the main event, but if you can pick him up, I think every time I think he's going to tail off, he goes out and throws another good start. And he's part of the reason Milwaukee has such a big lead. I don't think they're going to baby him over the last couple of weeks of the season either. And then the last guy is another sort of surprising arm for the Nats. He's Paola Espino. He's been getting actually more strikeouts than I thought, and he's 42% owned in the 12s and 93% in the main event. And I think he's worthwhile. He certainly is a lower level option, but he's been performing well. Again, as Adam said, the name value isn't that high, but sometimes that's not what you go for, especially in the last 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, just a note on Bassett. He threw a 30-pitch bullpen on Saturday. That was yesterday if you're listening to this on Sunday. And I do expect him to make his return to Oakland. At this rate, I'm not sure if he'll make a return this week, but he's a nice stash to hold on to for the final week for sure. He'll run on pure adrenaline if he makes it back onto the field, and that can get you pretty far sometimes.
The crowd will be behind him for sure.
Kevin, who are you looking at to start for you this week?
Yeah, a couple of guys that are heavily rostered in 15s, but have a lot of availability in shallower leagues. I like Tuki Toussaint this week. I know he's had a couple of rough outings recently and fairly shorter outings after he put a nice start to the second half together. But he gets at Arizona this week, and at San Diego isn't as daunting as it was a couple of months ago. So I like Tuki Toussaint. Carlos Hernandez, Kansas City, I briefly mentioned earlier, he's starting on Monday, so that's at Cleveland. That means he gets a Detroit matchup at Detroit over the weekend for his two starts. And then you always like to say, just check. Shane Bieber is not 100% rostered in any of the formats that we've mentioned tonight. Only 86% main event, 90% online championship. He's actually the highest rostered in Yahoo, where, as the news broke this week that he had gotten his rehab start earlier in the week, he was able to be picked up in some Yahoo leagues where he wasn't already rostered, 90% TGFBI. So a few leagues out there in every format, Shane Bieber is available. It appears he'll get another rehab start either tomorrow or Monday, and he lines up against the White Sox then over the weekend. He went 2 2/3 earlier this week. I would expect him to go 3-4 in his other rehab start over the next day or two. And then we'd be looking at possibly maybe even 5 innings against the White Sox. If not, the final weekend of the season, Cleveland is at Texas. So I would expect for that final week of the season, him getting 5 or 6 innings against the Rangers. Just check.
Yeah, I saw your note here in the notes about check. And I'm like, and then it has my name on it. I'm like, wait, what does he want me to look for? What am I checking for? All right, that makes way more sense. Because Bieber is exactly the type of player that you need to check for, because you just assume why would be available? That just seems silly. But as you mentioned, available in relatively plenty of leagues, probably plenty more than you would definitely expect. All right, well, we're talking about a lot of these guys have two starts scheduled for this week. Let's look ahead to the final week of the season. And I gave you guys a list of guys that are currently possibly lined up for a two-start week, the final week of the season. There's a little bit more than we've seen in the past, so I'm going to let you guys just look through the list. Let me know who you like, who you're fading. And Todd, I will start with you. Go ahead and pick anybody you want and let me know why you'd be getting them a little early this week if they're available, rather than, or are you just fading them completely?
So I like the pickups of Eliezer Hernandez and Miles Michaelis, because I think that they both can deliver maybe a quality start and a win. Michaelis obviously won't get you a lot of Ks, but I think he's generally available. And so I think you can possibly pick him up. I wasn't so keen on Madison Bumgarner, because I just feel like he's trying to get by more on guile and he doesn't really have the velocity anymore, and you could get hurt badly. So even though the starts look pretty good on paper, I would avoid Bumgarner and try to look elsewhere. The one other guy you had listed that I did want to note was Joe Ryan. Looked like he had two starts, but it looks like they pushed him back a bit, and now his one start is against Toronto, which I don't want any part of.
Makes all the difference based on... Yeah. Like, just to put in perspective, I had him at... He might have gotten a start at Chicago against the Cubs. And then in the two-start week would have been versus Detroit and at Kansas City. And to throw that all out the window and get him a start against Toronto...
It doesn't get much worse.
That's a big difference.
I think that could be, at this moment in the season, the worst start of all.
Yeah.
So, and then he would only get one start the last week as well. So I think unless you're just picking him up for the last start, I don't know you really want him.
Yeah, especially with that injury affecting his throwing hand and not his glove hand as well. So yeah, completely agree on that one. Kevin, who do you like? Who don't you like on this list?
I actually do like Madison Bumgarner from this list. And I agree with everything Todd said, but his only other appearance against the Giants this season, 7 innings, 1 hit. That hit was a solo home run. I apologize. He gave up 6 hits, but just the 1 earned run on a solo home run. He's been really streaky this year, is the thing about Madison Bumgarner. He started the season giving up 5 or 6 earned runs in 3 straight. Then he went on a run of 8 or 9 games where he'd only give up 2 runs or less. Then he had another stretch of 5 or 6 earned runs every time out, another 8-game stretch of only 1 or 2 in each start. Recently, he's given up 4, 5, 5, and 5 earned runs in 4 consecutive starts. But his last time out, 7 innings pitched at Houston, there's the one hit that I was remembering. Did give up 2 earned runs on that one hit, being a 2-run home run. Now, he's never all season had 1 good outing without having another 2 or 3 come behind it. Actually, 5 or 6 come behind it.
Okay.
I know this isn't anything that we should, that most people that study data would say we should put any stock into, but players do have streaks. Just because we can't quantify it doesn't mean it doesn't occur. So I like these matchups. I agree with Todd. There's blow up potential, but as streaky as he's been, it looks like he's about to go on a good one to end the season, and he couldn't have much better matchups to do it.
Yeah, I agree. One other thing that scares me is that I think because of his veteran status, I don't think that the D-backs will pull him early. So if he gets in trouble in the second inning, they're not going to just pull him out of the game. So that can work against you. Obviously, he can work himself out of a jam, and that could work fine. But I hesitate because he could give up 5 or 6 runs quickly, and they're just not going to bail him out with a rookie long man from the D-back bullpen.
Right.
Yeah, it's true. And of course, the Giants may have clinched a playoff spot, but they haven't clinched that division yet. So they're still going to fight for in the final 2 weeks. Hosting Colorado is not a bad idea.
No, that's a good matchup.
Yeah. Name on here I'd probably just be avoiding, which is really pains me to say, is Josiah Gray. And I think a lot of people might be tempted to be like, oh, he'll get out of it. He'll get out of his funk. And these matchups are so good. But the matchups have been so good for him, and he's been struggling mightily. And I hate to say it this way, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do the rest of the week. And I'm hoping it's not the rest of the season. I hope it's not that good so that his price doesn't skyrocket next year. Always got to be looking at next year's drafts, because as Kevin mentioned, we have some drafts starting up in about 3 weeks. All right, cool. We'll keep an eye on that. Of course, a lot of these are subject to change. A lot of, especially those teams that are in contention, they move their rotations around tremendously. And you want to make sure that when you're going after these guys, that you know that you could just lose out on that 2-start week. So at least if they go into 1 start, they still have a good matchup, then you're sitting pretty good. Like Tyler McGill has really good matchup against Miami next week, even if he gets pushed back. All right, let's move on to away from our counting stats and into some ratio help. Todd, who are you looking at that can either protect or even help you gain some ground in the ERA whip categories for your pitchers?
Well, there's 3 guys. I'm probably, some of them might be owned in various leagues, but Tanner Houck is now in the bullpen for Boston, and he did get a win today in relief. So I think that he could be interesting if he's been dropped because he was dropped out of the rotation. Then Aaron Ashby for Milwaukee. I think he might get a start next week, actually. He's listed on some sites as maybe being a start, but I would be thinking that he'd get some high leverage opportunities. And he's available in most formats. And then Dietrich Enns from Tampa. He was in a piggyback role, I think, and got a win. And I think he's pitches for Tampa, so he could give you another win or two, possibly, if things break the right way. So those guys are all maybe not high targets for people, but they could help your ratios at least and maybe get you a few strikeouts, even if they don't get a win.
Yeah, and as you mentioned before, sometimes you just want to put in players that are going to protect your ratios. They don't have to necessarily help you, but they can just protect those ratios. So these are good callouts here. Dietrich Enns, as you mentioned, I believe, if I'm looking this up correctly, is 0% rostered in the main event. So readily available across all formats. And Kevin, who are you looking at that might be able to chip away at these ratios?
I really don't want this to seem like it's a cop-out, but it's going to seem like a cop-out to a lot of people. But it's the same two guys we've been mentioning all year because they're still available in 80% of leagues in all formats. It's Brent Suter and Colin McHugh for me. They're still available everywhere. In some leagues, I've dropped them because I needed a roster spot and then picked them up again the following week. Nobody's grabbing them. And they're both on teams that are playing for something. They're both on teams that are playing for something but have the division wrapped up so they can rest their starters, pull them after 4 2/3, and these guys come in and vulture a win in the process of protecting our ratios. So it's really – I just want to keep bringing up these two guys. They're still available everywhere and been doing for us all year long. Brent Suter's still near the top of the wins leaderboard in the National League.
That alone is ridiculous. Another name that we've talked about in the past, Garrett Richards in Boston, in his pen has been doing pretty good things since he got moved into the pen as well.
Yeah.
44% rostered in the main event. And I'll correct myself from earlier. Dietrich Enns is a 40% rostered in the main event. After last week's fab, I was looking at the week prior's rostership percentage at 0%. But the other names you mentioned, Todd, Tanner Houck and Aaron Ashby's percentages actually went down after last
exactly week, so. That was a great point Todd made, and it's the same, it's for the reason Suter and McHugh are still available. As soon as they are knocked out of the rotation, everybody drops.
Yeah. All right, let's go on to everybody's again our favorite category, and that is saves. Who can get us a couple extra saves going into the final week? Kevin, I'll start with you. Is there any bullpen situations that you're watching for the last 2 weeks of the season?
I want to go back to something Todd was talking about at the very beginning of the show. And when I was double checking the Giants schedule for next week, as we're recording, I see they have Dominic Leon penciled in as a starter next weekend. If that is the case, that's on roster resource. If that's the case, then I definitely want Tyler Rogers for the coming week if they're planning on him starting at Colorado next weekend. So that's one I would definitely bring up that we did talk about earlier in the show.
Obviously, if he starts, he has no chance of the save. It does look like he's had a couple of starts where he's been the opener for the Giants, so he may very well keep that role. And he still might be able to find his way to the back end of some games. And
he might just pitch an inning or something in that game, sure.
But still, that takes him out of the contention for a save, at least in that game. So, to Kevin's point.
Sure.
Todd, any other bullpen situations that are worth watching moving in for the final 2 weeks?
Yeah, there's plenty of guys that are cycling out there that are not, it depends on the format, but especially in the 12s, there's guys like Andrew Kittredge, Adam Ottavino, about 50% owned in the 12s. Carlos Estevez has actually been quite good for the Rockies. And people don't like rostering a Colorado closer, but I think he's fairly reliable. He's only 37% owned in 12s. All these guys are higher owned in the 15s, but I do think they're worthwhile. And if you're in the 15, you can look around for Drew Steckenrider for Seattle, Rowan Wick, or Andrew Chafin. And even Chris Stratton for Pittsburgh, although they don't win that many games. But if they do get a lead late, I think he would get the call, and he's a pretty good pitcher. So I think there's guys that you can look for. It depends on whether you really need the save category. But not every team does, so you can get a guy for fairly cheap this week, I think.
Yeah, that's a great point. I like on your list here, a couple of different options you're looking at, but I like the Mason Thompson call out in Washington. Personally, their closer situation obviously is not one that you expect to see a lot of saves down the stretch per se, with Washington just being who they are at the moment. But I've been a Mason Thompson fan in general, so I'd like to see him get that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll move on to our final category. And that, of course, is my favorite category, is the wild card speculative ad category. It includes your opportunity to, you know, pick up Bobby Witt Jr. as your final stash of the season. And just so you can say you had him on your team in 2021. But let's go on to Todd. I'll let you start it off. Who is your wild card speculative ad for this week and probably for the final 2 weeks of the season?
I would say, I think Kevin mentioned him earlier, Jose Siri for Houston. I think it's questionable whether he's going to get the run for the Houston Astros, But I think if they do let him play, I think he's one of those guys that could either go on a tear and really give you power and speed at the same time, or he could just go an 0 for 20. So if you're in a position where you need that, as you said, Adam, a wild card, you know, that you're in fifth place and you just need something, I think he could be the guy to just put in their lineup and just let it rip and see what he does, because he's capable. He has a high strikeout rate, and he might just, you know, be off this week. But I do think he's got the potential to really give you counting stats.
Yeah, I like this call out a lot. Like I mentioned earlier in the show, he's been in the outfield quite four of the last six games. He did not start on Saturday, but while Brantley was out or missing some time, he was filling in a little bit more than he was. When he first got called up, I don't think he started a game for 10 days after he finally did get called up. But as you mentioned, when he has been starting recently, he has been producing. So hopefully he can chip his way into that lineup. And who's to say that Houston doesn't want to rest a couple guys down the last 2 weeks and give him, not so much give him runs to see what they can do, but see what he can do, but just to give their already beat up outfield. McCormick's coming back from, he's still nursing his injury. Myers obviously has been doing good, and you want to keep him doing good, but give those guys extra rest so that they're fresh for the playoffs.
Right.
Kevin, have any speculative ads for the final 2 weeks that you want to throw out there?
I really wanted it to be Bobby Witt Jr., but we talked about reasons I believe that won't be the case for the rest of this season. Take a look. It goes back to the always check thing, and not who's been dropped maybe even the past week or two. And maybe in some cases it was the past week or two when people finally gave up. But it, like Mike Trout, if he was finally dropped and you have an open roster spot, and we're talking about a wild card speculative ad here, so unless you have an open roster spot, this category doesn't matter anyway. if he comes back for a series, people with roster crunches have dropped guys like that. Jacob DeGrom's been dropped in many places. It's doubtful to me we see him, but we might. I think these guys, we have a better chance of seeing for a series or a start or two with Shane Bieber that we talked about, that it looks like we are going to see him, than minor leaguers coming up at this point, unless it's really to draw in a crowd for a homestand, because with 2 weeks ago, or with the situation like with the Durham Bulls clinching their championship, and now, okay, we can go get them at bats for a couple more weeks. That's a good situation. But in most cases, probably not going to happen at this point, or it would have over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think it's more likely to see a pitching prospect come up and make a spot start, because it's a lot easier to control that time spent in the majors that way than it is a hitter. Plus, every team, even if they're in contention or not, wants to rest their guys. And teams that are not in contention want to see what their young guys can do at the major league level. At least in my mind, the smart ones want to see that at least. So that's a good call out there. Specifically in the Tampa situation with Shane Boz making his debut next week.
Yeah, it's so sad. We, in most leagues, we can't bid on him tomorrow night.
No. You're right. We'll see. Whoever has the hammer in the final week of the season, I think, is probably going after him.
Get that one start.
Who's to say that he makes more than one start? That's the other edge of the
coin. If they leave him up, if they want to use him in the postseason and they want to see what they got, you're going to get three starts out of him in the final 2 weeks.
It's true.
Because his first one's on a Monday.
If you can get him for this coming week, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think that we covered a ton of players. And as I said, I think at the beginning of the show or at point in the show, this list gets longer and longer as the season goes on, just because there are a lot of different options that you can go after. And so hopefully you were taking some notes, and this helps you in your leagues as you are trying to make your stretch run. And I'm going to turn it over to Kevin for any final words, parting words that you might have as teams look at their final 2 weeks of the season, and what it is that any kind words of encouragement that you might have for our listeners.
Yeah. As we've been saying for months, keep grinding it out. And I think there's nothing specific that I have to say that we haven't said throughout the season. And on this show, we've gotten into a lot of these discussions on this episode. Something you brought up earlier, but I think it was before we started recording, start making downloads of different transactions and stuff that you're going to want to take a look at next season, or as you're doing your draft prep for next year. Whenever the commissioner of your league resets things, they can go away on many of the different sites. So the information you're going to want for next season, start getting that downloaded now.
That's good, because you can take a couple weeks or even a couple months off in the off season. But like when you're doing your prep, make sure you're doing a lot of the prep on your own and from your own experience, because your experience is going to make all the difference in the way you play the game moving forward. So whatever data you can get on your own and not completely relying, you know, except on others, except for incredible podcasts like ours, you want to do that, of course. All right, like I said, we talked about a lot of players. So if there are any other players that you're thinking about bidding on in the future and you want us to discuss them, you can contact us in a whole bunch of different ways. Email us at onthewirepod@gmail.com. You shoot us a DM on the Twitter at onthewirepod. And of course, you can join PL Plus over at pitcherlist.com. You get access to the Pitcherlist Discord and the advice and banter of all the members and Pitcherlist staff who are just waiting to help you win your league in the final couple of weeks of the season. I want to again thank Todd Whitestone for joining us on this episode. Todd, could you remind everyone at home how they can continue to listen to you and what you're currently working on and what you might be working on in the offseason?
Sure. So you can reach me at Telstar7 on Twitter. That's the easiest way to reach out to me. And I'm going to be doing continuing the twice per week main event updates, because as we get closer and closer to the end, the whole idea was to follow the horse race aspect of these leagues. And I feel the best way to do that is to do twice a week at the end instead of just once. So I'll be coming out every 3 or 4 days with another article. And that's at spstreamer.com. It's a free article. And I am, as Adam mentioned, I'm on the Pull Hitter podcast every Monday with Rob DiPietro. And we usually go through the article and talk about various aspects the way we did tonight. And it's a good time. And I think we also cover some specific topics that are helpful. So I appreciate you guys having me on. You did a great job all year with this podcast. And that's really helped me, because you're one of the few that does this podcast early, as opposed to doing it Sunday when everybody's like frantic, including me, trying to do all my bids. And this sort of sets it up. And I think that's been really helpful, the schedule that you guys have created.
Thanks, Todd. Yeah, I know that was definitely a major focus of ours at the beginning of the season. And I'm really happy with us, to honestly, that we've been able to keep it. I think we only recorded one episode earlier. It was but we still put it out Sunday morning. And it makes for some long Saturday nights, obviously, but it keeps our information as up to date as possible. And of course, I know there's been some examples of when we've missed some stuff that has happened either late Saturday night while we're recording.
Yeah.
That's easy for people to get that information. I think it's easier the harder part is setting up the initial fab runs. And I think this is what really helps with that.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Yeah. Of course. Thanks for taking the time yourself for coming on and going over this week's fab for everybody to hopefully make some really smart decisions for their fab run this weekend. That's going to do it for this week's On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, and leaving a rating review is always appreciated. We have one more regular season episode coming up. We have Derek Van Riper joining us for the last fab run. And then Kevin and I will be continuing to do our off season. We'll be doing it every other week. So you can keep an eye on the show in the off season as well. A lot of good stuff planned for here. So make sure you subscribe and get all the new episodes that come out on a regular basis. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. It's all spelled out. Of course, Kevin is at HastingKevin. And make sure to follow at PitcherlistPods to get updates about every new episode of all the Pitcherlist Podcast Network shows, and give them all a listen. We wish you the best of luck in all of your leagues and hope you win all of your bids by exactly $1. Thanks once again to Todd Whitestone for joining us. And on behalf of Kevin Hastings, I am Adam Howe. And with that, we bid you goodbye.